Welcome to All Things Eerie, a collection of spooky tales brought to you by the Nashville Public Library. Here we welcome the unwelcome, try to settle the unsettling, and play host to the undeparted, the undead, and, shall we say, the unreasonable. As we enter the land of shadows and uncertainty, the twilight of your imagination, relax while we pull aside the curtain, indeed lift the veil of the secret and unknown. And don't look around too much. It's bad for the nerves. Pull your blanket tight around you and make way for this evening's selection. Amelia Ann Blandford Edwards, also known as Amelia B. Edwards, was an English novelist, journalist, traveler, and Egyptologist. Her literary successes included tonight's ghost story, The Phantom Coach, the novels Barbara's History and Lord Brackenbury, and the travelogue of Egypt, 1,000 Miles Up the Nile, published in 1877. In 1882, she co-founded the Egypt Exploration Fund. She gained the nickname Godmother of Egyptology for her contribution. You might remember our discussion of the late 19th century popularity of all things Egypt in the conclusion of Hand in Glove, an Elizabeth Bowen story also found here on All Things Eerie. Amelia Edwards formed emotional attachments almost exclusively with women. From the early 1860s onwards, she lived with Ellen Drew Brasher, a widow 27 years her senior, who had lost her husband and daughter not long after Edwards' parents had died, and who was to become her companion until both women died in early 1892. Another significant person in Edwards' life was Ellen Byrne, the wife of a pastor and school inspector, with whom Edwards apparently entered a love relationship during the second half of the 1860s. The relationship ended when the husband, John Rice Byrne, was assigned a different school district and the couple moved away, which left Edwards deeply distraught. After catching influenza, Edwards died on the 15th of April in 1892. In September 2016, Historic England designated the grave Grade 2 listed as a landmark in English LGBTQ history. Tonight's story is chilling, both literally and figuratively. I will bring you now to the grim, snowy moors of northern England, where a hapless hunter must find his way home. But oh! What a journey awaits him, and what company. And now, turn down the lights and join us for The Phantom Coach by Amelia B. Edwards. The events I am going to tell you about are true. They happened to me 20 years ago, but I remember them as if they happened only yesterday. During those 20 years, I have told only one person about them, and now I find it difficult to overcome a certain reluctance. You see, I don't want you to force your conclusions on me. I believe in the evidence of my own senses, and I won't change my mind. One December day, 20 years ago, I went out hunting with my gun, but I had no luck all day. The east wind was cold on that wide, empty moor in the north of England. It wasn't a pleasant place in which to lose your way, and I had lost my way. A snowstorm was coming, and the evening sky was getting dark. I looked anxiously into the distance, but I couldn't see any signs of habitation, no fences, no cultivated land. So I walked on, hoping to find shelter somewhere. I had been out since dawn, and I was very tired. While I was walking, the snow began to fall. It grew colder and colder, and then the night came down rapidly. My heart grew heavy as I thought of my young wife watching for me through the window of the little inn. We had been married only 4 months, and we were staying in a remote little village called Dwolding, on the edge of the English moors. We were very much in love and very happy. That morning, when I left my wife, I promised to return before sunset. If only I had kept that promise! But even now I thought that if I could find shelter and a guide, I might get back to my wife before midnight. The snow continued to fall and the night got darker. I stopped and shouted now and then, but that seemed to make the silence deeper. I got frightened when I remembered stories of travelers who had fallen asleep in the snow and died. Could I walk all night in the snow? Death! I trembled, thinking how hard it would be for my darling wife if I died. No, no, I couldn't stand the thought of it, so I shouted louder and longer, and then I listened. Did I hear something? Was there an answer to my shouts? Suddenly, I saw a speck of light in the darkness, and I ran fast towards it. Then, to my great joy, I found myself face to face with an old man carrying a lantern. "Thank God!" I exclaimed. "What for?" growled the old man, lifting the lantern and looking into my face. "Well, for you. I got lost in the snow." "People get lost around here now and then, so why shouldn't you?" the old man said rudely. "Maybe you're right, my friend, but I don't want to be lost without you. How far am I from Dwolding?"
20 miles, more or less."
"And the nearest village?"
"That's 12 miles away."
"Where do you live, then?"
"Over that way."
"Are you going home?"
"Maybe."
"Then I'm going with you."
But the old man shook his head.
"It's no good. He won't let you in. Not him."
"And who is him?"
"The master."
"Who is the master?"
"Mind your own business," was the rude reply.
"All right, friend," I said. "You lead the way and I'll follow. I'm sure the master will give me food and shelter tonight."
"Well, you can only try," muttered my guide, and shaking his head, he went off through the snow. Soon I saw the large shape of a house in the darkness.
"Is this the house?" I asked.
"This is it," said the man, putting a key in the door, which was like the door of a prison. I stood close behind him, ready to enter immediately, and as soon as he turned the key, I pushed past him into the house. I found myself in a great hall with rafters on the ceiling. Hams and dried herbs hung from them. On the floor there were sacks of flour and agricultural tools. To my surprise, there was a large telescope on 4 wheels in the center of the hall. While I was examining it, a bell rang.
"That's for you," said my guide. "His room's over there."
I went and knocked at a small black door at one end of the hall. Receiving no answer, I entered without permission and saw a huge old man with white hair standing at a table covered with books and papers.
"Who are you?" he said. "How did you come here? What do you want?"
"James Murray, on foot across the moor. Meat, drink, and sleep." The man frowned.
"This is not a hotel. What right have you to force yourself on me?"
"The right of self-preservation. Outside I would be dead in the snow before dawn."
The man looked out of the window.
That's true, I suppose.
Well, you can stay here until morning." Then, turning to my guide, he said, "Jacob, serve the dinner."
Indicating a seat for me, my host sat down at the table and began to study his books again. I sat near the fire and looked round the room with curiosity. The floor was covered with maps, papers, and books. There were cupboards full of geological objects, bottles of chemicals, and other pieces of equipment. A model of the solar system and a microscope stood on a shelf beside me. I stared at my strange surroundings in amazement. Then I turned my attention to the master. He had a fine head, covered with thick white hair, and an expression of deep concentration. He looked like Beethoven, the composer. Suddenly the door opened and Jacob brought in the dinner and the master invited me to eat at the table. We ate in silence. When we had finished, Jacob took the dishes away and I took my chair back to the fire. To my surprise, the master came and sat with me. He told me that he had lived alone for 23 years, and I was the first stranger he had seen for 4 years.
Then he began to tell me about his life. He had been a student of the supernatural in his youth and had studied hard, learning everything the old philosophers said about spirits, ghosts, and specters. But modern science doesn't accept the supernatural, he continued, and because I studied these marvels of the spirit world, the scientists said I was crazy. The scientists and philosophers had laughed at him and destroyed his work and his reputation, so he had come to live in this remote part of England. He had forgotten the world, and the world had forgotten him. It was a sad story. When he had finished speaking, he went to the window. "It has stopped snowing," he said. I jumped quickly to my feet, ready to go. But then I said in despair, "No, it's impossible for me to walk 20 miles across the moor. Oh, I'll never see my darling wife tonight." "Your wife? Where is she?" "At Dwolding. Oh, I'd give £1,000 now for a horse and guide." The master smiled at this. "You can get to Dwolding for much less than £1,000. The night mail coach from the north goes to Dwolding. It passes a certain crossroads only 5 miles from here, in about an hour and a quarter. Jacob can guide you there." He rang the bell and gave old Jacob his directions. Then he offered me a glass of whiskey, which I drank. It was very strong. "It will keep out the cold," said the master. "Now you must go. Good night." I thanked him for his kind hospitality, and in a minute Jacob and I were out on the white, silent moor. It was freezing cold. No stars shone in the black sky. The only sound was the crunching of the snow under our feet. Jacob walked in front of me, and I followed with my gun on my shoulder. I was thinking of the old master. His voice and his words still rang in my ears. What he had said about the supernatural excited my imagination. Then Jacob's voice broke into my thoughts. "Follow this stone wall on your right, and you can't miss the crossroads." "How far is it?" "About 3 miles. The road is steep and narrow, so be careful, especially near the signpost where the stone wall is broken. It hasn't been repaired since the accident." "What accident?" "About 9 years ago, the night mail coach crashed through the wall near the signpost and fell into the valley. There were 4 passengers inside. All of them were killed. The coachman, the guard, and an outside passenger died, too." "How horrible! Near the signpost, you say?" "I'll remember." I gave Jacob some money, and he went away into the darkness. Then I began to walk along the road, keeping the stone wall to my right. How silent and lonely it was now. I felt so lonely I started to sing a tune. The night air became colder and colder. My feet were like ice. I walked faster to keep warm, and I tried to occupy my mind so that I wouldn't think about the master's talk of the supernatural. After a while, I had to stop and rest. As I leaned against the stone wall to get my breath back, I saw a point of light in the distance. At first, I thought it was Jacob coming back, but then I saw a second light exactly like the first, and I guessed that a vehicle was approaching. I was surprised. What was a vehicle doing on this steep, dangerous road? But there could be no doubt that it was a carriage coming fast and silently toward me through the thick snow. Was it possible that I had passed the crossroads in the dark, and this was the night mail coach I had come to meet? I didn't have time to answer before the coach came round the bend of the road at full speed. I waved my hat and shouted, but the vehicle passed me. Then, to my relief, the driver stopped, and I ran to the coach. The guard seemed to be asleep because he didn't answer my greeting and he didn't move. The passenger sitting next to the coachman didn't even turn his head. I opened the door and looked in. There were 3 people inside. I got in and sat in a corner, feeling very glad about my good luck. Inside the coach, it seemed, if possible, even colder than outside, and there was a damp and unpleasant smell. I looked at the other travelers, all men. They were silent, but didn't seem to be asleep. Each man was sitting back in his corner and seemed to be lost in thought. I tried to start a conversation. "It's very cold tonight," I said to the passenger opposite me. He lifted his head, looked at me, but didn't reply. "This is real winter weather," I added. Although I couldn't see his face very clearly, I saw that his eyes were looking at me, but he didn't say a word. I was beginning to feel ill. The icy coldness had penetrated to my bones, and the strange smell in the coach was making me feel nauseous. Turning to the traveler on my left, I asked, "Do you mind if I open the window?" He neither spoke nor moved. I asked again, and when he didn't answer, I pulled the leather strap impatiently to open the window. The strap broke in my hands. It was then that I noticed the thick mildew on the window, years of accumulated mildew. Now I turned my attention to the condition of the coach. Every part of it was falling to pieces. The whole machine was moldy. The wood was rotting. The floor was nearly breaking away under my feet. I said to the third passenger, "This coach is in a terrible condition. It's rotting away. I suppose the regular mail coach is under repair, is it?" He moved his head slowly and looked at me without saying a word. I will never forget that look as long as I live. It froze my heart, and it freezes my heart now when I remember it. His eyes glowed an unnatural red. His face was as purple as a corpse, and his lips were pulled back as if in the agony of death, showing his bright teeth. An awful horror came over me. I looked at my opposite neighbor. He was looking at me, too, with the same red glow in his eyes. I turned to the passenger next to me and saw, oh, God, how can I describe it? I saw that he was dead. All of them were dead. The pale, phosphorescent light of putrefaction played on their faces and their hair, which was damp with the dampness of the grave. Their rotting clothes were dirty with mud, and their hands were the hands of long-dead corpses. Only their terrible eyes were living, and those eyes were looking at me menacingly. With a scream of terror, I threw myself at the door and tried to open it. At that moment, I saw the moon shining on the signpost, the broken wall, and the black valley below. Then the coach rocked and fell like a ship at sea. There was a tremendous crash, a terrifying sense of falling. For a moment, I felt a great pain, and then darkness. It seemed years later that I woke up one morning from a deep sleep and found my wife sitting by my bed. She told me I had fallen over a precipice near the crossroads and had only survived death by landing in deep snow. Some men had found me at dawn, carried me to safety, and called a doctor. When the doctor came, I was in a state of delirium and had a broken arm. My name and address were on some letters in my pocket, so the doctor was able to contact my wife, who came and nursed me with loving care until I was out of danger. The place where I fell was, of course, exactly where the night mail coach had crashed 9 years before. I have never told my wife about the terrible events of that night. I told the doctor, but he thought it was all a dream caused by the fever in my brain. Well, others can form any conclusions they want. I know that 20 years ago, I was the fourth passenger inside the Phantom Coach. Thanks for being with us and for listening to All Things Eerie. For more shivers, stories, and episodes, visit the Nashville Public Library website at library.nashville.org. Feel free to leave requests or suggestions. Original music for this podcast is by Dawn Northwind and was produced and recorded by Adam Dean. Art design is by Allison Price.
NPL Studio Engineering is by Forrest Eagle, all of whom, with me, send their very best wishes to you for a very good night.